Off the Ball Daily.
A home for your favorite podcasts from Off the Ball.
I mean, given just the dire nature of a genocide, is the NFL an appropriate space for that? To me, it's the question is more, what isn't an appropriate space?
Subscribe to the Off the Ball Daily podcast feed right now.
Off the Ball Breakfast.
With UPMC Orthopaedic Care. When things don't move, rotate or bend like they used to, choose us to help you get back in action.
Welcome to Wednesday morning's Off the Ball Breakfast. Working backwards here, Stacey Flood, fresh from Rugby World Cup heartache, joins us to reflect on that devastating France defeat. The Middlesex one of Daniel Fizzichella, the Italian football journalist and broadcaster, and amico of the show. He joins us live. And Gavin Cooney as well talks all things Champions League and a wild night, the first night back in Europe's big time. We'll also have Eve Conway right at the end of the show to talk about Athlone Town women in Europe. Tonight, 0879 180 180, so you'll get us on WhatsApp or type Off the Ball in on YouTube. Click into us, you'll see the thumbnail, and you'll see three lads staring back at you. I'm one of them. To my right, well, this is an interesting fact. Sligo is the birthplace of the world's first all-wheel drive, multi-directional forklift, the combi lift, and Seamus Burke, who invented what? Cheese and onion tatoes. All of these people and things, of course, bow down to another son bred in Yates County. It's Arthur James O'Dea. Arthur, good morning.
Forklift.
Forklift was invented in Sligo.
By combi lift.
Separate. The combi lift. They love their lifts. Yeah. And cheese and onion, do you know about that?
No.
And did you know about the all-wheel drive?
No, what do you mean by that? What, like...
It's a good question.
I don't recall any kind of car manufacturing going on, but like...
Yeah. No, it's the first all-wheel drive anyway. That's all you need to know.
So Taito was developed in...
I haven't introduced you yet.
Sligo.
It with the cheese and onion flavour, yeah. You've heard the voice. You might have seen the face too. This man was born Perth, but it was in Europe that he flourished with a team from Louth. It's Vinny.
Some would argue down the strokes down road, but go on, I'll let you away with that one.
Good morning. You well?
Morning. How are you?
Delighted to have you.
Yeah, it's very good to be here with yourself, Colin.
Yeah, this is the first that we've done the whole show together. Many times we've been on the show together, but not the whole show. Are you excited?
I'm really looking forward to it. I have been practicing on the way in all morning. I'm going to call you Colin.
Yeah, okay. yeah.
Taking the leaf out of Ron Agar's book, so Cullum for the day.
It flies off the tongue of Ronan.
He has a way. It's Cullum.
Yeah, it's the Cork way to say it. You know, the correct way to say it, of course. How's Evan getting on?
Really good. Enjoying life. Yeah. Obviously, he had difficult moment in his life. His and like a really good friend of mine, his grandfather passed away, so that was difficult time from in terms of being away from home. It's a lot easier when you're, I'd imagine, when you're living in, say, Brighton, just outside London, when stuff like that happens, when you're 3-4 hours away from home. It's difficult. Obviously, the Ireland stuff has been hard to take. The lads have faced a lot of criticism. All the players take that collectively. I'd imagine he's took some of that on his shoulders. And, yeah, but other than that, I think we spoke about Roma before he went. I felt it was hugely... good move from because of who he was signing for. Mm-hmm. He's made a very brave decision.
As the manager?
Gasperini, and someone 20 years of age moving to a club like that. It's been really positive so far from him. We might speak about that later, but I think Italian people and media and sports people have called him the beast or whatever the right word is, but he's been really impressive, yeah.
Would he have talked to Gasperini much beforehand?
I think he had a meeting, yeah, and whatever it is. And I think he's seen what he's done at Atalanta, and particularly now, if you're clever, the way he played at Atalanta. So if you remember back to some of their great performances, even against Liverpool and different things, they had a really clever way of playing. It was a sort of, it's too early in the morning for numbers, but it was a 3-4-2-1 shape. And some Luckman would have played as sort of one of them two behind the striker. And at different stages, he played with two strikers in that formation. They went man-to-man with everybody. So I presume Evan, well, I know he did. He went and watched the style, what way the manager plays. And I think he felt he could fit into that.
Nice.
We've seen sort of his development as a footballer in Brighton in terms of his hold-up play. He was, for me, he was too close to his own box with that hold-up play. Right. I think now he's leading the line for them, and that's where some of people's frustrations were. That watch, so I watched a lot of pre-season games, almost all of them, first two games of the season, and then they went to Ireland and I never seen people past him. Pat, like, he's holding off some outstanding centre halves in the probably the second highest league in Europe, and we're not getting the ball to his feet and people off him. So that was the frustration of it all. But yeah, he's had a really good start, to be fair to him.
There's nothing in this this fact, a rumour, that he didn't start at the weekend last there, Evan Ferguson, because he would have equaled Francesco Totti's record of three starts in a row under 21.
I'm not sure, but I would say they would protect Totti as best they can, you know. The other side of that is, when you go to Armenia, it's a 7-hour flight home.
Yeah.
So you jump on a charter flight from what, who knows what time they leave the ground at. They had some tea probably. So even if Ireland squad are leaving the ground at 1 o'clock, you're getting to Dublin close on 7. Mm. And then you have a 3.5 hour flight back to Rome on, albeit that's Wednesday. So you're not fit to do a lot Thursday, and the way the Italians train and the intensity to train, the amount of sessions they get, he probably wouldn't have had a lot of training done by Saturday morning when the manager's picking the team. So you understand that, and that's what he did say.
Plenty to get stuck into today. There's loads of football last night. Just to start here in the other news and other stories in the papers, the World Athletics Championship, of course, are on. Andrew Coskren today competes in the 1500 metres final. It's only the third time in World Championship history that there'll be an Irish representative. It's an unbelievably stacked field. That's at 20 past two this afternoon, Irish time. So people tune in to watch that. He's obviously a heavy outsider to get anywhere near a podium finish there. But a hell of an achievement regardless, because it is such a strong field. The other news as well, beyond football, is that Hugo Keenan looks like he's going to miss possibly the rest of the year here. I'll just get this up for you. Injury issues mount ahead of November tests. So Ireland coach Andy Farrell has significant blow to deal with ahead of those internationals. Hugo Keenan set to be out of action until the new year. So he underwent surgery after the Lions tour. And Caelan Darris and Joe McCarthy are also in line to miss another bit of time. In the case of Caelan Darris, he won't be fit again. Possibly not until after the New Zealand game in November. And then Joe McCarthy also picked up a bad knock on Lions duty. The URC actually starts next weekend, and Leinster start their action in South Africa.
Question on Hugo Keane.
Yeah. Like,
is that injury he had, he was injured going into the Lions tour.
Yeah. Well, he had a run of injuries, yeah.
And then, so, if you think of a club player, who owns Hugo Keenan in terms of his playing time?
IRFU.
So they definitely wouldn't have held him back and said, no, we need to keep you right, would they? Like, he's gone to the Lions tour more or less injured. He's got injured. Now he's had surgery and he's out for a long time. Who does that affect most? Leinster and Ireland? It's...
Yeah, like, in hindsight, you're thinking, oh, geez, what was the point in doing that? But, like, when we're speaking with rugby players, ex-players, journalists, and you're asking what the pinnacle of the sport is, representation of the Lions is right up there. Like, even our own, as regular as yourself, James Tracy, would say that, like, the Lions is the be-all and end-all. And look, he got the series-winning try in the second test as well, so I don't think he's going to personally regret his involvement, considering what he achieved with them. Leinster will be frustrated, no, and Ireland will be frustrated.
The question is, Colm, is the injury linked, had he got that injury pre-tour? And if so, did somebody make the decision to go, let him go for the Lions, and we'll deal with it after the Lions?
I'm not sure.
It's an interesting question, because if it is, then RFU are sort of, the Lions has the biggest priority than anything else.
Yeah, I suppose it's because it's just such a rare thing, you know. It's every 4 years, and it's like, well, okay, we'll leave you off because it's the Lions. It's the ultimate. It might not be the worst thing in the world anyway, because the World Cup's 2 years away. No harm trying someone else a fullback in the November test. Like, they're going to be unbelievable against New Zealand, South Africa, Australia. Australia are, like, all of a sudden not quite formidable but very competitive, so it'll be interesting. I don't think it's actually any bad thing, but yeah, the men's rugby season's back in action next weekend, so next weekend's going to be ridiculous. That's the Ryder Cup weekend, and the URC's back as well, so Munster Ulster.
You're going to be watching another URC, are you?
Well, it'll be favourable, actually.
It'll be on
Friday night, you know, although it'll be, sure, it's in Bethpage, so
there is League of Ireland on Friday night, Colin.
Yeah,
so,
of course,
they're always
live
every week.
You have
a podcast, don't you? The other iPad.
There is one there, yeah.
Yeah, you've never felt more alive. Speaking of that, Athletic Club 0, Arsenal 2. Loads of headlines here to get stuck into. Subway, you getting that? Subway, you having it? Back of Sun Sport.
Sure.
Because of the subs, you see, they made a huge Jared impact.
Normally loves that stuff, doesn't he?
They made a huge impact. Leandro Trossard and Gabriel Martinelli came on. Smash and Gab. Martinelli and Trossard off the bench to fire Gunners to glory. Gift of the Gab. It was Martinelli's horse. Wasn't a great finish, actually, when he burst through 101.
The keeper was poor.
Stood under the, like, he very much telegraphed what he was going to do with this, and I think he actually tried to go far post, stuck under the keeper's body.
Did you feel vindicated?
I did, yeah. Sweet vindication, yeah.
Yeah.
What's this?
It was only 2 days ago that you were pointing out Arsenal's strength and depth, and specifically named Martinelli and Trossard, only to be scoffed at.
Oh yeah, but sure, he would say, oh, Trossard, yeah. I was like, these are the lads that win you things. These are the squad players that win you games, you know. At home to Burnley, Saturday, 3 p.m. Satanta Sports back in the day. You know? That's Trossard. 3-1 win. 2 goals. You don't need him against the big boys. You know, it's these type of games. And that's why they have a formidable squad.
They have strength and depth. When you think even in particular who was missing for them last night, Ogard, Ben White, we sort of half forgot a little bit about Saka.
Saka's the... Yeah, like that was just the huge improvement they've made from last season, because they had this huge over-reliance on Saka for years, not just last season.
And even Havertz is out at the moment, so it's just options, isn't it? It's like you said, that 3 o'clock on a Saturday after a Wednesday night Champions League game, Havertz might start. 1 week he may start a Champions League game, depending. When you think about Arteta tactically last night, you put Eze in narrow off one side, and that's away from home, a difficult venue, and then opened up as the game opened up. He felt comfortable and then throws Martinelli on for Eze, and then boom, goal. The keeper was awful for the goal. And to take away a little bit from my column, the second goal was a fluke as well. But the two of them did come on and score.
Yeah, yeah. That doesn't matter, yeah. The grand scheme of things, to win 2-0 that play that
well,
great.
He even left Saliba on the bench because he's nursing an injury. So there is.
Mascara came in, yeah. He's been good since he signed.
Nev City on Sunday.
Yeah, there's a hell of a number of good Premier League games on paper. You have the Merseyside Derby, you have Manchester United, Chelsea, and you have that game as well. Matt Awake has been pretty good actually so far, isn't he? Because a lot of people, when they signed him, like, people were a bit like nonplussed by a guy. I was like, why are you paying that much money for a guy?
He did a petition.
Yeah, who was okay. He was okay with Chelsea. He was fine. He seems to have come on leaps and bounds here. Maybe he's proven people
wrong.
But
even his performances for England have been exceptional as well. It's one of them you feel that maybe the project in Chelsea is developing, potentially developing a lot of good players. In a year's two time, Chelsea could just, if somebody just goes and says, we're going to work off this group of 16, 18 and sort of sell off the rest and just focus on the one, all them young players. But they'll probably be feeling, did we give Madueke enough game time? Did we give him enough run of games in his set position? Because for the last month, he's been excellent.
But really, the other really side good. Then, last night, Emery Eze.
Yeah.
Is he going to be shunted to the left a lot with Arsenal? You know, this is the conversation I was having. We're having that debate with George. George thinks he's going to flourish at Arsenal and be one of their best players. And look, they've centred him. He's going to wear the number 10 jersey. He seems to be playing a bit so far. It's early days. But ultimately, he's going to play on the left because of the 4-3-3 system. He's not going to play in the middle.
But is that not the horses for courses argument, that there's times where you play in midfield, he may even play alongside Martin Odegaard as well? You might see the two of them with a Rice behind. I know Rice is playing very well in the eight.
Yeah, that'd be rare enough though, would it? That would be the game that they're definitely going to win.
So those games, for them to win a league, or anyone to win a league, those games where you have total dominance and you need something a little bit different.
So
the point is, he's got loads of options. One sitting in midfield, two ahead, you're dominating the game. When you go back to, say, Liverpool on Sunday there, where they just couldn't break down the team, you could see you have different options, as opposed to, I think over the last year or two, they didn't have enough options to change games when they needed to. Or you're chasing a game, whatever it is. I think he now has options. I think Eze would play in two or three positions. But the question for him is, if there's a big Champions League game, money on the line, does he start? Not sure if everybody's fit, he actually starts.
So be Saka up there with Jokeres and what, Havertz, maybe Martinelli, maybe Madueke.
Yeah, that means that, like, again, does Saka
play? That's more natural, isn't it? It's a more natural fit with the three.
Yeah, and like, your best player is Saka, okay, when everybody's fit. So moving Saka onto, say, onto the left is not, doesn't make a lot of sense. But there will be times where he'll feel he can do that. I'm not sure Madueke is going to be brilliant off the left, but I think we'll find out soon, because if Saka's fit, I think if the second game's at home, he'll be able to try that out as well. So it's just options. It's options everywhere, isn't it?
It's so early days now, right? But do you think Yakra is going to be a success? It's so interesting with centre forwards coming.
I'm not sure
club.
He's going to score loads of goals for them, but I think he'll be a success. Arsenal have started the season, I know they lost to Liverpool, in a way that there will be commentary around same old Arsenal. He'll ultimately want one. Arsenal started the season that, help me out here, lads, they're sort of becoming the favourites for the league title in with the squad they're building.
Yeah, I think so.
And I think people are dismissing Liverpool too easy, as in, I seen a Paul Merson quote yesterday. They should, like, absolute nonsense. They should, they're a mid-table team on their performances in the first three games. Like,
who's Merson there?
Yeah, you find a quote, but it's something along them lines.
Friend of the show.
Like, yeah, okay, sorry. He's brilliant. But, do you know what? It feels like Liverpool and Arsenal go scrap it out, doesn't it? And Arsenal have added so much strength and depth. Arsenal can't be second best forever. There's a time where they will get back to their winning ways.
Just when you see it the weekend as well, I know it was odd circumstances, but the way they bet Forest, it was just like no fuss.
Yeah, you know, I've seen that a lot over the last few years.
I don't know if you do though. They make mistakes. Like even I know people, they got stick after the Liverpool game, but like it was nearly perfect bar. An outrageous free kick. Like, you can't litigate for that. It wasn't a you know what I mean?
Like, yeah, I know, but still.
Like, Liverpool weren't going to score other than that.
I remember when people went when they drew 0-0 away to City the year before last. I was like, I thought that was an overreaction. That was a grand point. But like, I'd be a big fan of Mikel Arteta. Like, from like where he took over, all he's done with the club now, and the players that he's attracted to the club. Unbelievable squad he's built. You trust Arsenal to an extent. I would say, right? To an extent, you trust them and you trust Arteta. But I don't trust them ultimately to win the league.
Well,
I don't think, I think that's one step too far.
You'd be careful about ever saying that without thinking about it. But throw it at
you. I've thought about this for 6 months.
No, I'm going to say so. Right. If Klopp was in charge, Pep was in charge.
Yeah.
Say even a Ferguson was in charge, or, you know, one of the league winning great managers of this Arsenal squad, are they favourites then?
Probably.
Red hot favourites in the squad.
Not red hot. I would say Liverpool and Arsenal squads are so competitive.
You could argue Arsenal defensively better. Van Dijk aside,
they've conceded one goal.
Mm. Arsenal.
That was the free kick. But it's the only goal in five games.
I've never really worried about them defensively either.
But like,
you know what I mean?
But like,
they do so much right until when it really, really comes to it, and I'm waiting to be proven wrong.
So the point I'm trying to make is the question Arteta as opposed to the squad. Has he got the tools, or has he got it up here to go and win a league?
It is mental, because it's still his first job. He just happens to have been in the job a long time.
Yeah, but it's just because his first job.
So he's still one of the biggest
clubs in the world. You've got to win something eventually.
All right, look, I hear that all the time, like, you have to win something, and people are saying about this season Arsenal that they have to win it this year. Like, why? Like, there'll be another season next season.
Yeah,
right?
But it's not Brighton. But also, it's not Brighton, Colin. It's not Aston Villa. It's Arsenal. You have to win something.
They've all spent a fortune.
Teams win trophies regularly, and it doesn't really change an awful lot. Like, do you know, like, so you have, say, we mentioned it yesterday about United winning a few domestic cups and the Europa League. And what did that
mean? He's talking about
Premier League and Champions League. That's it.
Premier League.
So if Arsenal win the FA Cup and League Cup this season, that's for argument's sake, they win the domestic double and they finish second again in the league. Well, is that another failure?
Yeah. Yeah. We're at that stage where it's fine margins. It's that stage where how long do you say to Arteta, it's okay finishing second and third? At what stage is that okay?
And then it becomes the kind of Arsene Wenger top four as a trophy thing, where, you know, you finish top four.
And there's an argument for that, but it comes a point where you have to say, Arsenal need to win a league title, and Arteta needs to show he can win a league title. Or else you say, we get someone who can win one.
They're unbelievably well placed. Like, I can't really find... Can you find a weakness in their... Not even their starting 11, but their deeper squad.
It's early, but centre forward wise.
So if Gyökeres goes missing or whatever,
we don't know.
And Havertz will have to go up front again.
Yeah, but he does like that Havertz sort of And particularly when you've got, say, the pace of Saka, Madueke or Martinelli, a lot of teams like that sort of centre-forward showing to feet with runners in behind. Feels like he's got two or three ways of playing up front. Like I said, away from home, Eze playing there gives them that solidity. Last night, you look at, he didn't even score a set piece last night. They scored two breakaway goals. Like the second goal, Martinelli's pace, or the first goal, Martinelli's pace is exceptional.
Yeah.
And what will be interesting is, I've used this phrase so many times, Martinelli's a good player. If Arsenal become a great team, I think he becomes a great player, if that makes sense.
Good players. He needs greatness around him.
Well, yeah, good players. You don't get to the level of Arsenal unless you're a really good player. To become excellent, you need to be part of a really big team. He has the potential to maybe leave people behind him, and all of a sudden Madueke doesn't get in because Martinelli becomes the star, etc. There's all those little variants where there's a competitiveness in the squad now that if a few of them players go up the next level in the forward area, boom, they have it all.
How about their biggest rivals, Spurs?
Do you know what? There was a big lesson for Spurs last night. Did you see any of the game? Like Spurs have a lot of stuff that's exciting as well. I think they've added strength and depth to their squad.
Yeah, late and but eventually.
But kudos from West Ham, looked a hell of a good player, and it'll take him a while to settle in. Simmons on the other side. They've got like a couple more options there. They've Brendan Johnson obviously was only on the bench last night. What the big lesson for the manager is, Thomas Frank looks a hell of a good manager. But they were very open last night. And they rode their luck at times a little bit. And he's got to learn from that. Champions League football at the highest level is different than the Premiership. How often? I know we're talking about Spurs, but the big one to watch for me is you've got the best league in the world in the Premiership. You've got probably, when you look at Liverpool, Arsenal, top teams in Europe, City, you look at the strength and depth just below that, Chelsea, Spurs, Newcastle, really top teams.
Yeah.
How many of them are going to be in the latter stages of Champions League?
Yeah, it's interesting.
That's the one for me, is eventually is English football going to take over European football? It's cup football, that can happen, don't get me wrong, quarter final. But they've won Champions League, English clubs, sporadically over the last few years. But like, you've got to see a little bit more from the very top English sides, you feel, in the Champions League. Go and dominate the competition.
Yeah. Champions League wouldn't be Spurs' priority, though, would it, overall this season? Like, what is it?
Getting into the Champions League again.
Yeah, it's a bonus, isn't it?
Yeah, it's a bonus, yeah.
They've only conceded one goal so far, which was a defeat, albeit at home to Bournemouth.
I think we had this discussion before.
What
would you rather be, a Spurs fan at the end of last season or an Arsenal fan? Spurs fan, you won a European competition.
Arsenal.
Why? So looking to the future?
Yeah, it's more
about winning trophies.
It is about winning trophies, but there's a greater certainty. Like Arsenal, Arsenal are
winning leagues and trophies are two different things.
Arsenal are so well placed. Like, I'd say it's unreal at the minute for them.
Okay, so, but living in the moment, Arthur.
No, look, I get you, and I do get you, but I still think there's probably. I suppose it all depends on if they actually go and do something.
So Arthur, a fan that pays season tickets, that lives in that North London area, that bleeds.
You watch
Spurs,
an awful lot of shite.
You're watching your mate going, what's the cleanest way of saying you enjoy that week going out there, because they're lifting the European trophy, they're having that moment.
But like, you watched an awful lot of rubbish.
I
still think, like, I know it's not the same and nothing, but like, I'd say for even those Arsenal fans, you have it, again, if it all builds to something, you have like the Rice against Real Madrid, those free kicks back, like they're unbelievable nights. Like, if it builds to something,
but what you're saying, Arthur, is right. Spurs, you're looking to the future as a fan, going, next season we're going to be brilliant.
Have to.
Where the Spurs fans going, this season it was great.
Yeah.
We have a trophy. It's interesting. I'd probably agree with you. Like, I'd be an Arsenal fan heading into this season.
Once the
summer break was over, but you'd enjoy the summer as a Spurs fan.
For sure.
To be fair, even Ange, like Spurs had a huge amount of injuries last year, and the squad didn't have huge depth. I think they've fixed a lot of that this year. the race for Champions League this year is off the charts with some of the stuff. And obviously then, maybe it's made easier by the likes of maybe Villa now won't be the one chasing Europe as well that he did last year in a couple of Forest. Wait, by the way.
Six teams from one country is mad, right? It's the most ever, actually, representation in Champions League. So if you finish top two in this league format, you're guaranteed a home draw first right up until the final. So there is...
Oh, really?
Yeah, it's a new... Oh, right. So there's a few things happening this season. So they're trying to encourage teams to finish up high because I suppose they saw Paris Saint-Germain last season who finished way down the league, way, way down, and then got going in the new year.
Is the home leg first what you want?
I guess so.
Would you not want it second? Like for all,
I don't know. The away goals are gone, isn't it?
So yeah, but you still, like if you visualize, say Liverpool, second legs in Anfield.
That's what you want.
Even if you're 2 or 3 nil down, you still have a chance.
That's a weird one.
Yeah,
I'd have thought that you would want it because it's
maybe they think it's a bigger prize than it actually is for the teams. You know.
You know the way sometimes I like to cry here, Colin.
Yeah,
and
we've rolled it.
Get a little something out sometimes. I was watching Carabag for two reasons last night.
Like, yeah.
So Shells, obviously, we've done the commentary on them, and Shells were decent against them. Not that long ago, we played against Carabag in the Champions League game himself. And then you look at Shells players, are probably looking at them beating Benfica away 3-2 in the Champions League. Going,
yeah.
We hit them players. We scored. We should have hit. It's like, isn't it amazing from like to be the level we're at League of Ireland wise to be up against these people, and you look, and sometimes people might criticise Shells and they could have done this, could have done that. It's Carabag beating Benfica in the Champions League last night, 3-2.
There were some unbelievable scores last night. You know, people can get cynical about Champions League, there's too much football on, but there was a hell of even the numbers. You were talking about, it's too early to talk numbers. It was a numbers game last night. Even with the goals scored last night. It's interesting that you brought that game up, right? Benfica 2, Carabag 3. They might be looking for a new manager soon. They might get one soon as well. Ruben Amorim reportedly this morning, and you thought we'd get away with talking about United, but again, he's on the papers, the back pages. Amorim's got 3 games to sort it out. Next 3 games doesn't go well, he's gone. It's never good when they start talking about you have X number of games to save your job, you're done. Because even if, say if he wins the next 3 games, right, and then comes back after the international break and loses the next 4, should he be gone anyway?
But you can't put someone, you can't put someone in. That means the first game for a new manager, be the interim or whatever else, is Liverpool in Anfield. Mm. You can't start someone there.
It's not, and starting away there, isn't it, I suppose.
Yeah, that's Nottingham Forest.
What do you mean?
Like it's not, if it was Nottingham Forest Derby, grand, but it's not Nottingham Forest, it's Man United Liverpool.
I know, but it's just a way to Liverpool to
quick. Is Amorim not asking to be sacked, lads?
Oh yeah.
Go back and
I think
saying,
so, I think
on,
so, yeah.
Sack
I'm telling you now, I'm not going to change, so do what you want.
Yeah, go on. I dare you.
It'll cost
give me the 7-8 million there, will you? Like?
14 million like euro will cost the club if they let him go in the next 7 weeks, inside 1 year of his tenure. I forgot, right? He only signed a 2.5 year deal.
Yeah, short, that sounds familiar.
It's short.
Yeah.
Now, there's an option to extend it by another year. So 14 million it will cost United. And probably the bigger news, actually, is that the reason I mentioned that figure, and again, this is, you know, you saying we're talking United all the time. This is in the back pages now, this morning.
We are talking about United all the time, Colin. Last night was one of the best Champions League nights in years.
We'll get to it. This is all part of the script. Read your lines. United can ill afford to pay off their sixth manager since Ferguson retired, with the club's financial difficulties set to be revealed when their annual accounts are published today.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
So they're going to be in the back pages tomorrow as well. Anyway, like you were saying, Vinny, right? Loads of Champions League action last night. Union Saint-Gilloise making their debut. 3-1, they went to the Netherlands and beat PSV Eindhoven. And how about this game? And we'll talk to Daniela Fisichella about this, I'm sure. Juventus 4, Dortmund 4. Half-time, nil all.
Oh, it was a brilliant game of football.
Juventus were 4-2 down in the 93rd minute.
Yeah.
And some of the goals scored in this game now, some of the goalkeeping as well. Oi, oi, like. But the two of the first 3 goals.
It's very Dortmund, isn't it? They did the same thing against Real Madrid last year.
Yeah, I like them.
It's just, but they'll.
They're not serious people. It's enjoyable, I'd say.
There's no lead secure enough or time short enough. It's always up for grabs.
That's the club motto, yeah.
But to see this game last night.
Yeah.
And even the Arsenal game, when you look at the stadium and that, it feels like. That dreaded word, the Super League, like you can see why there
would have been good.
A certain amount of appetite for it. Like, brilliant.
But this is a Super League.
Yeah, yeah.
We're playing in the Super
League. But Juventus last night, 94th minute, Vlahovic scores, gets cross front post. Brilliant goal.
Great finish.
So cool.
And who got the equaliser? Lloyd Kelly. Lloyd Kelly is flying it over in Juve. Also scored at the weekend. So in another cracker.
Tell me,
Inter.
I'm not the only one that goes. Lloyd Kelly, he has to have, like, must have some from Meade in his family. Like, has
I don't. Daniela will tell us all about that. But he's well acquainted.
Well, we must ask him. There's a superstar there, young Turkish lad.
Yeah,
20 years
Yılmaz.
Yeah.
Oh, he got the first goal. Player. Signed a new deal, I think. Yeah. Brilliant goal. Hell of a match. If you haven't seen that back, watch back the goals after the show, of course.
Well, call him Real Madrid.
We're in association with the show.
Amazing match as well.
Yeah, well, that's the other game. 2-1 Madrid beat Marseille. Very interesting.
Anyone
game.
That sort of backed or whatever right word is went after Mbappe. Two penalties.
Two penalties. And running. Timothy Weah took the lead for Marseille. 6 minutes later, Mbappe equalised with the first of two penalties, like you say. Danny Carvajal was sent off in the 72nd minute. And probably the biggest headline for people of a Liverpool persuasion anyway is Trent Alexander-Arnold went off injured after just 3 minutes. Looked hasn't gone too well so far from
him. No, looked at like his hamstring. In fairness, I think oh, it's so early. Imagine it's going to take him a while to settle at that club. And Carvajal is there as well. Like, I think people just, they won't. The floodlights are on him. He's at the biggest club in the world. But he just needs time and space. And in a stupid way, having that injury now just takes him out of headlines for a week or two, whatever it is, and he can just settle down. I think he's suited to Real Madrid, but like they've got... like,
what are they going to do with Trent and Carvajal when they're both available?
It feels like at the moment today, you would say Carvajal is ahead, but then it's always the way. He's now heading into suspension. He's done a stupid headbutt. There wasn't a lot in it. Headbutts the goalkeeper, gets sent off. Madrid have 4 sending offs in the first in 10 games they've had. Yep. It was ridiculous. The manager, it's gone out of my head. Xavi Alonso has to sort that out. But he's still looking at Madrid last night, and Rodrigo's winning the penalty. Vinicius Junior's winning the two men. He's a brilliant back heel in the middle of it. And Mbappe, 2 great penalties. And you're like, oh, are Madrid just going to turn up in Champions League final and go boom, have that thing, yeah, whoever it is.
So Barcelona are looking tasty as well. They hammered Valencia 6-0 at the weekend, and again their squad is ridiculous. Another great 6 games tonight, well, some of them anyway on paper. So 8 o'clock, you have a big decision to make at 8 o'clock out there, right? You can watch either Bayern against Chelsea or you can watch Liverpool against Atletico Madrid.
I think Atletico are missing Alvarez, aren't they?
They were talking.
That'll be a deep 11.
The boys mentioned this last night. When you hear Liverpool against Atletico Madrid at Anfield, what do you think? Because I thought it straight away too.
The COVID game.
Yeah. Do you remember that game? Do you remember it played a day too late?
Yeah.
That's all I think about with this picture. So that's at Anfield tonight. You also have Ajax Inter, the Onana derby. You got Paris Saint-Germain against Atalanta. So they're the 4 8 o'clock games. And then the early game, this is for the real hipsters out there. This is for the likes of Vinnie Perth, right? You have Slavia Praha against Bodo Glimt.
Or Olympiacos.
That's the other one. Let me get to that. Olympiacos against Paphos. Where are they from? Cyprus. I was on holidays in Paphos 2 years ago. 2023. Tiny place. It's an unbelievable achievement. Paphos are going to be.
Greek Cypriot derby.
Yeah, get your push notifications up and running there. Paphos FC. 5:45 tonight, Irish time, against Olympiacos.
Where is that? In Greece?
In Greece, yeah, it's in Olympiacos. Where's closer to fly from? If you want to fly from Ireland to Cyprus, Ireland to Greece, what's further away?
I thought it was Cyprus, not the far side. Which one's far? Greece is closer,
Greece,
isn't it?
Greece the other side.
Greece the other side?
Yeah. Yeah. So you because when I was there, when I was on holidays there, Greece were playing Ireland. I considered going over for the game. Flew over instead, flew back to Ireland when the game was on. Finished 2-1 to Greece, and I thought, oh, that might be an alright performance. Shocking performance. Results flatter us. When did we hear that last? So that's your Champions League action tonight.
That game was in like July, wasn't it?
Yeah.
Very hot time to be in Cyprus.
Remember that game clearly. Tsimikas had the freedom of fullback.
Yeah.
And the other guy from Champions Football or Championship.
Who?
The right back and left back. Anyway.
It wasn't Baldock, was it?
Yeah, wasn't it? Both fullbacks.
Passed away subsequently. Yeah. Vinny, when Brentford had their first day of the season against Nottingham Forest and they conceded poor goals, did you worry for Keith Andrews then?
Yeah, I think everybody did.
What about now? They've just beaten Aston Villa latest in the Carabao Cup last night on penalties. They drew 1-1 with them in the game, 1-4-2 on penalties. Are you, you're poo-pooing the idea?
I'm not. I'm just saying I'm always a bit
skeptical.
Win.
No Irish involvement last night on the pitch, of course. No Keevan Kelleher and Nathan Collins. Villa had some debuts. Harvey Elliott, who scored, who was wearing the number 9 jersey,
Not having that.
No, he's a midfielder. I don't like number nine midfielders. And Jadon Sancho starts as well. They both got subbed. Finished 1-1, as I say, went to penalties. Brentford won. It's been a really good start for Kitanjas, isn't it?
It has. Overall. It's been really good. And I think not like I obviously done my pro license with Keith, so not taking that away from Keith for real quickly is it just shows you, and it's a lesson for so many clubs. Structurally, from top to bottom, it feels like Brentford are tuned in. They know what they're doing. There's a pathway for players, there's also a pathway for coaches. All of the background stuff. And yes, they lost a lot of players, and people would say, well, is that structured? But they obviously had a plan, they had a way of doing things. There's a couple of them they probably would have preferred not to lose this early. They did. They've taken in a huge amount of money. And because of the structures of the club, it's probably made it easier for Keith as taking over, say, in Nottingham Forest, for argument's sake, where it's completely unstructured and the chairman's running around on the pitch and everything. So for that end of things, that's helped them. But he deserves huge credit for what he's done. I mean, we should be very proud. An Irishman out there in the hardest league in the world, the biggest league in the world, best league in the world. He carries himself almost statement-like. You know, I mean, you can see why the British media love him and the way he speaks, and he's very clear and precise. And yeah, hats off to him. It's still early days. I think the noise will come back in a couple of weeks if things don't go well. But where every time Brentford score, you have a little... Yeah, I'm glad for him. I'm glad for the Irish lads there as well. So it's really good, and long may it continue for him.
Yeah, absolutely. It ended up being a decent result against Chelsea as well at the weekend. Get the 2-2 draw.
Can I bring one quick one?
Yeah.
Cyprus by far further away.
Yeah, I said the other side.
No, you said Cyprus was closer.
I meant Greece was the other side. Ask that. It's still a long flight. It's the longest flight. It's the longest flight you can have in Ryanair, I'd say. It's... miles away. I'm going to say something else there. It's ridiculously far away. You could go to New York, I'm saying, Giovanni, and get entertainment on the flight. But instead you go Ryanair, you have to entertain yourself. One more story here I'd like to do before we go to Gav Cooney, who's on the other side of the ads. FAI dismayed at treatment in recent days, says Siptu. This is a report by Aidan Fitzmaurice. I can see your eyes going up to heaven now about this more FAI stuff, but this is important enough. Ahead of a meeting with the FAI CEO David Krell next week, trade union Siptu, who represent a section of the association staff, say their members are still appalled and upset at how staff have been treated during the early phase of a proposed redundancy process. Last week, Siptu stated their unhappiness at the non-attendance of Krell at a meeting over proposed cuts to staffing levels, though the FAI later claimed that the CEO had not been booked in to attend that meeting due to a diary clash, a claim that Siptu also a dispute. So it's starting off with voluntary redundancies and eventually will become compulsory redundancies. But I think one of the many issues, and there are plenty, is that it's unclear about how many. This is just a continuation of where we are with the FAI, isn't it? Or is this something that's possibly needed to reshuffle the pack, to reorganise the actual organisation to make it
up to standards? I don't think, to be fair to David Krell or whoever's making that decision, they're making redundancies for the crack. They're obviously... they have to pay bills. You know, what happens is when organisations aren't going well, all the sort of dirty linen is washed in public. For that to be a story, you expect it's going to be harsh negotiations between a union and their employer who's making redundancies. If the association was flush with money, it'd be easier discussion or not. So therefore, it's going to be difficult to get it. I'm not taking anyone's side on it because difficult people are losing their jobs, but it is part of any sort of industrial negotiations. It happens to be the FAI, the most talked about sporting organisation. I had this row with somebody recently that nearly the Ireland manager's job is probably the biggest job in Irish sport in terms of...
scrutiny.
They argued, no, like, you know, being in charge of the RFU or different people not having a bar. This, I think in terms of scrutiny... Irish football is not the most funded organisation, but Irish football is the most participated, and I'm sure you see it on your own socials. Once it's a story around Irish football, it's huge. Yeah. To be fair, rugby has a huge sort of buy-in from people. So if you're into and football is consumed in so many different ways, not just here, loads of different places. You can get your sort of your premiership football on your phone, all that stuff as well as here. So, but in terms of the scrutiny in Irish football, it is a difficult role for whether it's David Carell, whether it's... not saying they've all made good decisions of being very critical of people in here for years. It's difficult because or just constantly, it was the same last Sunday. It's just, you're almost waiting for Sunday morning, what's the latest FEI story? And some of them same stories happen in every organisation around the country, but so many of them now are public knowledge. And I'm not saying it's wrong that they're public knowledge, I'm just saying it's a really difficult situation for the FEI to rebuild and rebrand, and they have to do that, and they have to take learnings from the last few months, but it's hard to be a lover of Irish football at the moment because of, and ultimately it goes back to the FEI. They've got to clean their act up, and I think they tried to do that. We must ask Gavin this. It feels like they tried to do that in a communications way, and they went too far corporate. Mm-hmm. There's rumours of people, like, if you're going out to meet the media, spending 5 and 6 hours a day talking to your sort of PR guy to make sure you don't say the wrong thing. We're sort of Irish. We feel, be a bit more natural and professional at the same time.
Sip to continue, and I'll finish with this. Our members have also been concerned by recent media interviews in which inaccurate figures and staff numbers have been presented, and a failure to acknowledge that a significant growth in management roles in recent years has impacted the organisation financially. All right, 8:11 a.m. on this Wednesday morning. OTB Breakfast at UPMC, Orthopaedic Care. When things don't move, rotate, or bend like they used to, choose us to help you get back in action.
Off the Ball Breakfast
with UPMC Sports Surgery Clinic. When things don't move, rotate, or bend like they used to, choose us to help you get back in action.